Welcome to Crosspoint.
Welcome to Crosspoint.
Welcome to Crosspoint.
We are an inclusive faith community
seeking to live out the loving, just, and generous way of Jesus.
We are participants in a long tradition
that's less concerned with doctrines and dogma that demand total agreement,
but a life to be lived, enjoyed, and given away to others.
What unites us is a growing awareness that life is precious,
that we are made by love in order to love.
This community is comprised of and affirms the entire human family,
regardless of race, age, creed,
physical abilities, marital or economic status,
gender identity, or sexual orientation.
So, if you are curious and have come to see,
if you are tired and have come to rest,
if you are grateful and have come to share,
if you are wounded and have come to heal,
if you are joyful and have come to celebrate,
if you are uprooted and have come to belong,
welcome home.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
Humor me for a minute, or 20. I know it's not the 4th of July or Memorial Day when we traditionally talk about liberty, but it feels like the theme of freedom has been very much a part of our November. Election Day, Veterans Day, Thanksgiving, Indigenous Peoples Month, Transgender Day of Remembrance, all of these have links to freedoms given or taken away. Throughout this past year's election season, sorry for the reminder, but not unlike past elections, candidates accused one another of conniving to take away various personal freedoms and promised they were the only ones who could possibly preserve them, as if freedom were something tangible, like a child's toy or a football interception. We're about to celebrate Thanksgiving, built for centuries as a time when the indigenous tribes shared a celebratory harvest meal with the European pilgrims, which is a beautiful image, but we now understand the horrors of the freedoms taken from the indigenous Americans in the name of the right and freedom to colonize and possess. I also want to point out the obvious that I'm a white European American who hasn't personally experienced mass hindrances to my freedom, although some of those things have been starting to be taken away. All that to say, there's a lot of talk about freedom. It's a favorite American topic. Now, when you hear the word freedom, what do you think of? We all likely have different definitions and images that come to our mind depending on when and how and where we were raised. My grandparents, 1.5 generations removed from European immigrants, would likely have described freedom very differently than my southern grandparents, who I recently found out have a family tree that included family members who had enslaved individuals and passed them along in their wills. Thankfully, that was a surprise to most of us, although it maybe shouldn't have been. Regardless, both sets of grandparents lived through the Depression, the first moon landing, the invention of the microwave, the civil rights movements of the 60s and 70s, several wars, including a worldwide one and a cold one. Compare that to me now, where my freedom often just means I can choose from hundreds of cereal and shoe choices. I can complain to a manager when I don't like how my food was cooked, and I can pretty much say or post or protest anything I want to, no matter its potential harm and with few ramifications, unless I go viral. So if you've ever served in the military, your definition of freedom is likely shaped by what you have seen and experienced and committed to defend. And thank you for your service. It allows the rest of us to not have to worry about or fully comprehend how good we have it. We're at a time in our country when many rights and freedoms are being chipped away or blatantly revoked and denied. And so freedom, for many, doesn't have quite so bright a ring to it as maybe it once did. In the United States, we've grown to interpret freedom through the lens of our Bill of Rights and Declaration of Independence and our subsequent interpretations of them. Free press, free speech, freedom of or from religion, freedoms, rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Because our American cultural emphasis on individualism, freedom and individualism often get conflated. They seem to be interchangeable. freedom becomes just another name for no outside interference, no limits, just individual autonomy, individual happiness and satisfaction. Darn anything or anyone else. I'm staying PG today. How many of us, when asked about what freedom looks or feels like, can't help but sigh and imagine a time and place, maybe tropical, with no responsibilities, no chores, no to-dos, no messages, no one needing us, no work, no one to do, needing us to do anything we don't want to do, and no one to challenge us about it. Or perhaps we think about freedom more along the lines of the American dream. We can afford a home or rent. We can comfortably pay the bills. We can get the kids a good Christmas. We can have the freedom to choose which turkey we want on the table and which car to drive to grandma's. For much of the world, which 1 in 11 of whom live on about $2 a day, or for the 37.9 million people in the United States living in poverty, the idea of that sort of freedom is laughable. So does that mean then that those with the materially least among us have no and who have no vacation time have no hope of freedom, or at least our current understanding of it in America? What is it that we're fighting for? So if that's true, if individual freedom boils down to our choice, our officials, our jobs, our places of worship, the myriad of merchandise and entertainment media affords us, and actually has been offering at discounted early Black Friday sales, then we have to acknowledge that the freedoms we most value in our society are provided to us because others are denied freedoms. What do I mean by that? Well, for example, the freedom to have our choice of cheap clothing and goods is often directly linked to the amount of worker exploitation and poor working conditions that most of us will never see or have to acknowledge. Our freedom to choose what we believe or what we want to about climate change means that we have to deny the most vulnerable the resources and solutions they need to continue to grow and work and survive. And it denies future generations the same natural resources we have. Our belief that we have the freedom to say whatever we want, however we want, to whomever we want, means that we value expressing our opinions and feelings more than we value a recipient's freedom of feeling safe and secure and feeling that they have the right not to be harassed. And in fact, people we now celebrate, we celebrate them because they say whatever's on their mind, regardless of the harm or consequences. Our freedom to live in relative peace, at least from outside attacks, means that others have given their lives and livelihoods. Perhaps when we say we fight for freedom of autonomy and choice, what we really mean is we want the freedom to be oblivious, or at least to openly choose apathy. So what are we discussing when we talk about freedom? Well, to quote my favorite movie, I do not think it means what you think it means. But to pull us back into our current context, I don't think that's what our New Testament writers were talking about. We've Americanized this idea of freedom, or maybe just westernized. It's been famously written, "It is for freedom that you have been set free." And I think we, particularly those of us who call ourselves Jesus followers or maybe Jesus adjacent, need to reimagine our understanding of freedom from a New Testament context rather than from an American one. Jesus actually didn't talk very much about freedom, at least not directly. He did declare famously that he had come to set the captives free, that the truth would set us free, and that if he set us free, we would be free indeed. But that was pretty much it. But the freedom, as we might define it today, and as many Americans might claim it is, was not Jesus's highest goal. It was mixed in with a lot of really other important things. And the people Jesus said those things to were not living in conditions we would currently consider USA free today. They were a minority group living under the thumb of Rome. And let's not forget Jesus himself was Jewish, from a culture rooted in ancient Israelites' identity that had been largely defined by enslavement and captivity and oppression, first by Egypt, then by Babylon, now by the Roman Empire, not to mention several other governments in between. And in the early days, the Israelites had chosen to be ruled by a monarchy, even though they were warned against it and that they wouldn't like it. And history has shown us that monarchs tend to love dishing out freedom to everyone who questions them. Ancient Israelite monarchs were no different. The Israelites were also bound by their own religious and lifestyle laws. Most Israelite history would not come close to anything we currently would recognize as freedom. And yet, Jesus told them they could be free. In fact, he told them they were free. Jesus might not have talked much about freedom, but Paul, the preacher and spreader of Jesus' knowledge to the non-Jewish communities, the Gentiles, did. There was a pretty serious rift between the leaders of the Jesus movement in the years after Jesus' death. Paul, the leader of the non-Jewish or Gentile Christians, called Peter, the leader of the Jewish Christians, a hypocrite and said he opposed him to his face, like some sort of reality TV show. Peter and Paul didn't get along. Christianity, up until Paul, had primarily been a Jewish movement, a branch or a sect of Judaism. So most of the followers were Jewish. They followed Jewish customs and traditions. Most still worshipped in their synagogues. They observed the Torah, the Sabbath, dietary laws, circumcision. So from their perspective, if you wanted to be a Jesus follower and you weren't already Jewish, first you needed to convert and follow Jewish laws and practices. But Paul disagreed a lot. Although Paul was Jewish himself, he rejected the idea that there were any requirements to follow Christ, maybe other than just belief and the right treatment of others. There was no conversion necessary. Everyone was free to follow Jesus as they felt was best. And this is what Paul taught as he went throughout the Mediterranean preaching, converting, and establishing churches. Now, one of Paul's followers in the city of Corinth, one of his churches in the city of Corinth, took this understanding of freedom, believing that meant they weren't bound to any type of moral law. Freedom meant free from anything. Paul came to them and said, whoa, 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 whoa. He actually told them this. You say, I have the right to do anything, but not everything is beneficial. You say, I have the right to do anything, but not everything is constructive. No one should seek their own good, but the good of others. You may have also heard this translated, everything is permissible, but not everything is beneficial. In other words, just because they could didn't mean they should. And before we dismiss that as some sort of old thinking, a website I recently saw described freedom this way. Freedom is the opportunity to do what we want, when we want, and choose how we want to do it. It's following that voice inside, no matter where it might lead, and oftentimes walking to a different drummer. It's the ability to think our own thoughts and make our own choices. Maybe? Except what about everybody else? Individualism, of course, is important. Freedom of choice is important. But how do we live in community when this just sounds like selfishness wrapped up in a bow? What about when our freedoms, or at least what we perceive to be freedom, hinders others' freedoms or actually causes harm? Just because you can do it doesn't mean we should. Paul got particularly angry at a group of his churches in Galatia, and he wrote them a scathing letter. He felt they had been doing great up until this point. They were exercising their freedoms. They were following the teachings of Jesus. They were living in community. They were serving one another. Things were going great. But then all of a sudden, that stopped. And he didn't like what he heard about why. This letter is one of his angriest. I want to read you a portion of it. We call this letter the Letter of Galatians. And we're now in what we would refer to as chapter 5. This is what it says. It's for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery. Mark my words. I, Paul, tell you that if you let yourselves be circumcised, Christ will be of no value to you at all. Again, I declare every man who lets himself be circumcised that he is obligated to obey the whole law. You who are trying to be justified by the law have been alienated from Christ. You've fallen away from grace. For through the Spirit, we eagerly await by faith the righteousness for which we hope. For in Christ Jesus, neither circumcision nor uncircumcision has any value. The only thing that counts is faith expressing itself through love. You were running a good race. Who cut in on you to keep you from obeying the truth? In an earlier chapter, he says, who has bewitched you? That kind of persuasion does not come from the one who calls you. A little yeast works through the whole batch of dough. I am confident in the Lord that you will take no other view. The one who is throwing you into confusion, whoever that may be, will have to pay the penalty. Brothers and sisters, if I'm still preaching circumcision, why am I still being persecuted? In that case, the offense of the cross has been abolished. As for those agitators, I wish they would go the whole way and emasculate themselves. Another version says he wishes they would castrate themselves. I told you he was upset. You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge in the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love. For the entire law is fulfilled in this one commandment. Love your neighbor as yourself. If you bite and devour each other, watch out, or you will be destroyed by each other. Paul is pretty upset. So he's saying, if you use your freedom only for yourself, it will be your destruction. Freedom for Jesus and Paul had very little, if anything, to do with individualism. Freedom was first experienced through this understanding that there were no prerequisites to following Jesus. There was freedom in that. And second, it was found in relation to one another. There's a theologian, Richard Bauckham, that describes it this way. Freedom, when exercised as an independent individual, has no positive relation to anyone else's freedom. Essentially, it sees freedom as competitive. On this definition of freedom, my freedom really would be increased if I denied other people their freedom, overruled their freedom, and subjected them to my will. In a well-functioning community, we are not restrictions on each other's freedom, but enable each other's freedom. Freedom is not a zero-sum game, so that the more freedom I have, the less you have. The more freedom we give each other, the more we all have. Let's think about this one other way. I'm not a scientist, but consider the example of free radicals, right? Just the name would give us a hint of what's to come. We've heard a lot about free radicals for the past many years, but a free radical in its simplest form is a molecule with an unpaired electron. It means it's not connected to any other molecules, which makes it highly unstable and potentially dangerous and destructive to the body. Free radicals are linked to a host of negative things in our bodies, including things as small as wrinkles, or large as wrinkles, and as large as diseases and cell damage, and even cancer. Free radicals are cells that go out on their own without the consideration of others. They just go their own way. These cells think they have the freedom to move about the body however they would like to, recreating themselves and wreaking havoc. We spend a lot of time and money trying to prevent or rein in or eliminate free radicals from building up in our bodies. We do this through a lot of antioxidants is one way. And at the risk of over-personification, these free radical cells grasp freedom. They abuse it, and then it becomes a serious problem. And so Paul believed that in a well-functioning community, let me pause and say Paul didn't know anything about free radicals, but he did believe that in a well-functioning community, in this case, the community of Jesus followers, freedom wasn't this arbitrary license to do whatever you wanted and darn the consequences, nor was it a freedom to ignore what your freedoms were causing. True freedom was understood as freedom of mind and heart and life in mutual service to others. Pause there. How often do we put the word service and freedom together? They seem to be antithetical. But service doesn't mean servant. Mutual service removes that paternal or maternal relationship with one another, being bigger, better, wiser, smarter, all the things, and instead recognizes that we are all on equal footing, that my neighbor's freedom is also mine, and that my lack of freedom is also theirs, and that the more freedom we can offer to one another, the freer we all are. It's not a zero-sum game. It's not a pie. When we recognize how free we are, in heart and mind and spirit, then we realize that we have the freedom of choice and that we want to extend those freedoms to others. When extreme individualism is our definition of freedom, people become our restrictions, not our allies. True freedom allows us to recognize who we are and who we're meant to be. And if freedom is the basis of Christian ethics, then loving service is the proper exercise of that freedom. I also should mention that at the end of this chapter, after the scathing review of how these Galatians had been acting, at the end is this familiar verse about the fruit of the Spirit. It comes at the end of Paul's writing about what it means to be truly free and how we extend freedom to others. Paul writes that the best community practices are love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Freedom's not in there anywhere. This is how we exercise our freedoms in community. And just a side note, mutual service doesn't mean doing everything another person asks you to do. You may need to oppose someone out of love for yourself or them. And sometimes we need to cut ourselves from community and find a new one, particularly if where we are leaving was toxic to us or to others. So I'll ask a question that I often do when we get to this point. And this time it's, how might we reimagine freedom? I'll share some of my thoughts, some of the things that have been ruminating in my mind. You can take them or leave them, and feel free, please, to consider your own. First, I think that we need to reflect on our understanding of freedom. Is this something we flippantly refer to, or it's just part of our vocabulary as an American? Is it something we call upon and feel the need to defend? But what do we mean by freedom exactly? Have we conflated our desire for autonomy and individualism with freedom? How might claiming our rights infringe on the rights of others? What is our understanding of freedom entangled with, and why? How do our perceived freedoms cost others? Where might we have intentionally or unintentionally abused our freedoms? Second, I think it's important to understand what our idea of freedom says about us. Our spiritual freedom is not defined by the amount of choices we have or by how many people stop giving us their opinions and leave us alone. Our freedom is first defined by our understanding that we are loved unconditionally, no prerequisites, and that frees us up to love and serve others, ultimately spreading it around. Lastly, I think that recognizing our own freedoms should cause us to recognize the lack of freedoms of others. Perhaps we should change the word here to liberties, because you can be free in mind and spirit even when you are not in body. But recognizing our freedoms should push us forward in our struggle for the liberation of others, mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional. This is another way we can show loving service to one another. So how might we use our freedom to contribute to the freedoms and liberation of others? So to close this out, I want to reread a portion of Paul's letter, a little reworded, and then we'll hope you have a great Thanksgiving week. Christ has set us free. Let's act like it. Let's not allow ourselves to be caught up in imaginary or constructed freedom. All the shiny stuff being thrown our way. All the false messages that tell us if we just do this one thing, buy that one thing, we will be better, we will be freer. Don't fall into the trap of believing that there is only enough freedom to go around and that you have to take others' freedom to keep yours. Don't believe that restricting others' freedoms somehow enhances yours. Instead, use your freedom to bring freedom to others. Abuse of our personal freedom is not really freedom. It's self-enslavement. It's fake news. There's enough freedom to go around. And besides, we are already free. Free to be who we have been told we are. Enough good, wanted, and loved, loved, loved. Let us then go and share that freedom with others.
If you would like to know more or get connected to Crosspoint, go to crosspoint.org. If you're in need of care or assistance, go to crosspoint.org/care. And welcome home.